We were talking about John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band.
Yeah.
They had a good 5 to 6, 7 hits that I couldn't
really
believe I remember.
I remember that one. That's it. The Dark Side. That's
Aaron
it.
Just mentioned
Living in the City.
C-I-T-Y. Hard Times in the City.
Oh, I didn't know that was them. Okay.
Yeah. I was always, you know, annoyed by the fact that, like, I wasn't Eddie the Cruiser supposed to be like the 50s or 60s?
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
He fake dies, and then he comes back in the, you know, like 80 or something like that.
Oh, that's the plot. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but his big classic hit was On the Dark Side, from which is
like sound
like
a 50s.
Yeah, it's a 1978 E Street Band song, basically.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's She's the One.
Right, yeah.
It's only She's the One.
Ear and Loathing.
That's right. As they said, you are now at Ear and Loathing, where you'll have a good time and you'll like it.
Come on, you had a good time. You liked it.
Afraid you're going to like it?
You're soaking it.
Yeah, here we are in episode 73 with the Gitmo Bros. We are the number one rockers forever. Kindly write that in your journal so you don't forget it.
Put it on the fucking post-it on the fucking fridge or some shit, dude.
Write it in the sky.
We bring it up like 25 times a year for you people.
Wow. Yeah. Constantly reminding you, you know, put a notification in your phone or something.
Get one of them Livestrong bands around your wrist.
This is number one rockers forever. On the other side,
and snap it if you think you're the number one rocker.
Yeah. That's $1 million idea.
Check out our new merch.
We are here ready to dive into some songs and some mirth. And I guess we should introduce the gang here. And so the first person I would like to speak with, if you don't mind stepping up to the microphone, sir, he is the media darling that is oh so sexy here on the show, and he's about to say hello.
I'm George White, I'm Little Lord Foxleroy, and I got a rod for my pod.
Wow. Oh yeah, there it is, I see it.
Boing.
And then, of course, he's my North Star. He's George's North Star, and he is George's Rod's North Star. Why don't you say hello?
Baringa! God bless and rest in peace to beautiful Carl Wallinger of World Party and the Water Boys. I love the band, the Water Boys!
Oh, man, did we take another one down?
Yeah. God bless.
Yeah, I didn't even hear about that.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, Joey must be legitimately distraught.
Yeah, it fucking sucks. Everybody go out and get Private Revolution and Goodbye Jumbo as the World Party Records and literally anything by the Water Boys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Joey's the one who first said, I love the band Van Halen, right?
Yeah.
His first concert was the Water Boys.
Yeah, so now he's saying
and he
for
lied
everything.
To his mom to said he was going somewhere else.
When Joey heard the news, he goes, I mourn the band, the Water Boys.
That's right.
Thank you.
To the heavens.
All right. So here we are. George is in the torture chamber today, which I've been looking forward to. And he's going to also enthrall us with something. So I hear tell. And I guess before we do that, we need to take a step into the bureaucracy that is known as Clem Clemson. and his administrative assistant, gubernatorial. So let's see what these guys have to say.
Hi there. Welcome to Cabot's Corner.
That's what I expected.
Cagey.
On the back of the record, I love it in the credits, it just says gubernatorial banjo / administration. Like that's his job on the
So here we are, George. I think you have some stuff for me, and I think I have some extra work to do.
Couple more clicks.
Couple two, three more clicks.
So I'm going to do a Loathe to Love. So Let that theme roll.
A Loathe to Love theme song coming up.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Loaf of love, you baby. Whoa.
I forgot about this.
Loaf of love, you baby.
Whoa. Sounds like he's in custard.
Loaf of love, you baby. Whoa. I loaf of love, you baby. Whoa. Loaf of love, you baby.
Nice. I love old Lango.
Guy, putting it down for you, huh?
Yeah.
Beautiful work there, Guy. Thank you again for all you do for our show. And now, what do you have for me, George?
All right, so let me set the scene. You know, it's 1985, and we're smack dab in the middle of course, the mixtape. Everyone does mixtapes. You guys did them, I did them. Everybody did. Now, when I did my mixtapes, you know, you remember me going to Tower Records and getting all my singles and my cuss singles and all that. So I would, my mixtapes had a lot of different stuff on them. And I did like to, every once in a while, because I think I'd be funny or it would spark conversation, you know, I'd pick like a song I thought was funny or stupid. Like, whoa, you put that on here? Ha ha, aren't right. you funny? Mm. Okay.
That sounds like the Ear and Loathing origin story.
Just about, right?
Yeah.
And so one of those songs I had picked in that time was Tom Jones' It's Not Unusual.
Great fucking number.
And to me, at the time, that was corny. I didn't like Tom Jones. He was corny. He seemed like a variety show jackass from the 70s to me. And honestly, specifically speaking to this podcast, he seemed like the English Mac Davis to me. That's mm-hmm. what he seemed like.
Yeah.
Like same haircut, kind of same face. And I didn't realize until I just looked it up now that Tom Jones did have kind of a country career during that time.
All those dudes had a verd, like they would do a gospel yeah. record. They would do their country record, their American yeah. songbook.
And so he seemed, and Mac Davis always seemed like a country artist to me, which through this podcast I've learned he really kind of wasn't. But I did not like Tom Jones. I loathed him. You know. And also, talk about pretentious, I picked It's Not Unusual because I could also, when someone said, oh, yeah, this song's stupid, this, you know, and I'd go, hey, you know, Jimmy Page played guitar in this, you know, right?
Oh,
you do
cool.
know that, right? Actually, there's controversy about that even. There's like four or five different stories of whether he did or not. And Jimmy does list it in his CV. He does list it as he did play on it. So I'd love to do that. So I'm kind of, you know, I don't think much of Tom Jones. And then, of course, in, what is it, 87, he does Prince's Kiss with the Art of Noise.
I remember that.
And suddenly he's cool again. And I like that song. I like Prince. I like the way Tom Jones does it. And I start listening to his other music, and all of a sudden, It's Not Unusual. I'm like, this is a great song. What am I doing? Like, I like this song. Then I got into She's a Lady, and I really like that, and everything else. I like Delilah, and even a corny as What's New Pussycat was. And then, of course, I'd forgotten that Thunderball. He did Thunderball
yeah.
from fucking James Bond, and that was awesome. Now it's 1990, and I've got my, you know, in my magazine, fast forward, this like an A&R tip sheet. And I got different writers that write columns for me and stuff. And by then I have enough juice where I can get concert tickets, you know, to most anything. They may not be great. I'm not going backstage, but I can make a call to most record labels. And if I'll put something in the magazine, you know, they want proof that I did most of the time, but I'll have to send them the clip or whatever, but they'll get me tickets. And I'm like, me and my girlfriend Heather, I'm like, we're going to see Tom Jones. We're going to the Celebrity Theater in Anaheim to see Tom Jones. And I am completely rockered, you know, that was the cowboy hat period with the leather jacket with the Mr. Clean thing in the back.
Oh, right.
Just, I am, yeah.
Is that the American Rocker, George? Is this a version?
American Rocker's high school. That was high school. I'm like 24 years old.
Okay.
And we go to the Celebrity Theater, and I'm certainly a Tom Jones fan, but I'm expecting it to be sort of funny or cheesy or something, you know? And we go, and even at 24 years old, I'm probably, you know, I'm easily the youngest person there. Like, there's, you know, women that are 40, but a lot of them, and I remember trying to get out of the aisle, and a lady on the end had an oxygen tank with her. And still was yelling for Tom Jones.
Sure.
And he comes out, and you guys know what's going to happen. He is fucking fantastic. He is great. He's absolutely, I guess I didn't realize that he did, you know, he did his songs along with cover songs of the time or even from years back. And I remember most of this, but I looked it up today in the show and everything, that he opens with Bad Case of Loving You.
Oh, nice.
And it's absolutely great because during the chorus, you know, doctor, doctor, give me the news. Yeah. I got a bad case. And with that, and with the, he does a hip thrust. And the fucking crowd goes crazy. Everybody's just crazy. And he's so good. And he did this great version of Don Henley's I Will Not Go Quietly. And it was great. And he did Hard to Handle, like sort of a weird acid-y version of In a Gata de Vida. Oh, like, wow. It was along with all of his other hits, you know, like I think he also did he did I'll Never Fall in Love Again. The
Dionne Warwick?
Yeah, Dionne Warwick song. Yeah. I think he did Layla. Like, anyway, it was a fantastic show. And I've been a Tom Jones fan ever since, where I saw him at, I've probably seen him 5 or 6 times now, like Greek Theater a couple times, House of Blues, he played Hollywood Bowl, but I didn't go. And I was a fan after that, where I loved everything about him, thought he was great. You know, and even at Christmas, there's a million versions of Baby, It's Cold Outside, but I love his with Cerise Matthews. She was in a band called Catatonia. Mm. And I went from loathing Tom to loving Tom. And if you want to play a little of It's Not Unusual, I've got it there for you. We haven't listened to the whole thing, but, you know, let's hear a little.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone.
Yeah, you gotta love it. But I could see why, because I probably felt the same way you did, George, about, because it's such a corny...
Yeah,
I don't know what it was. We were sort of trained to reject anything that was kind of swinging in 60s and corny like that.
Oh, totally.
Even though the songs were great, but like you just grew up goofing on that, you know? Maybe because they took these legitimate entertainers like Tom Jones and they sort of, a lot of schmaltzy guys got a hold of that persona. Like even Elvis kind of, I thought was embarrassing the end. So if you go back to the source, which is Tom Jones in 1966 or whatever this is.
Singing, 65.
Yeah. Yeah. Singing It's Not Unusual. It's, you know, you can't top it, you know?
Yeah. And this is a minor induction, I guess, I knew Frank Sinatra, of course, and I did put a fair amount of his songs on my mixtapes. But Tom Jones really was the first thing where I realized that he didn't write anything. Like he just was an interpreter of other music. And that's why he did so many covers in his show. I was like, where are his songs? And then he started doing some of his songs when I saw, I'm like, oh, right. And then I looked it up then, which you couldn't look it up so easy like you can now. But, you know, they're Burt Bacharach songs and they're always written by somebody else. Like this one's a Burt Bacharach song.
Oh, It's Not Unusual?
Yeah.
For some reason I didn't know
or,
that.
I'm sorry, it's not. It's a Les Reed Gordon Mills. The B-side to this is a Burt Bacharach song.
Yeah.
But it's one of the other ones, I think She's a Lady is a Paul Anka song. And that's how he worked. And it hipped me to being an interpreter of songs rather than... I just thought musicians wrote their own songs because every band I liked, they did. And they didn't do a lot of covers. And so that was a revelation to me at that time or when I first started thinking about the kind of music that Tom Jones did.
Yeah.
But it's a great song. And then I had some facts about Tom Jones that I wanted to run by you guys that I thought were especially funny. Tom Jones also, you know, was married to like his high school sweetheart. They got married when they were 17 years old or something, and she died in 2016. But he was, you know, such the ultimate coxman of of every decade, you know, and was rumored to have a huge schwanz.
Right.
Which he called Wendell, and used Listerine to keep it clean.
What?
His quote was, "I use Listerine to make sure everything down there is sterile, like a surgeon before an operation. It's a good way to do it. I say that mouthwash isn't only for gargling."
Sounds like something a Welshman would say.
Right, doesn't it? Totally does. Like,
does he just like fill up a glass and soak in it or something? Like, how
I don't know. Sorry, I just pictured him with the bottle, just pouring it, like just down there before he goes on. You ready, Tom? Like the wardrobe girl's like just opens his slacks and is like just
If you get Listerine inside, isn't that going to sting?
I would think. Maybe that's what he thinks he has to do to, you know, purify himself because he's got getting so much ass. You know, I just...
Did he ever use the gag with a woman when he was about to disrobe for the lovemaking? Did he ever use the gag, excuse me while I roll down the windle?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me, got to roll down the windle. And, you know, another song of his I really loved is in 2000, he did Mama Told Me Not to Come with the Stereophonics.
Oh.
I love that. I love that version of it. It's a really good version of it. The other thing, speaking of Tom and his coxmanship, I love this, that for the New Year's Eve, like, Washington, D.C. celebration for, you know, 2000, the year 2000 coming, Bill Clinton invited him to the New Year's Eve party to perform. And all I could think was, Bill Clinton, Tom Jones in the same room, there was not a vag safe in that entire room. If you had a vag, you were getting hit on. That was it.
Yeah.
It must have just been a... Just forget it. I mean, those two guys, what a competition.
Right.
Just
everyone got laid that night.
Yeah, boy.
It was incredible to see him because he would always have variety shows, like specials back in the day that would happen all the time. And even though I didn't have a television, I knew about it because I'd be staying at friends' houses and stuff. And so there would be, of course, Sonny and Cher would have a seasons of shows. But often guys like Tom Jones would just get a variety show and it'd be an hour long and he'd get to bring in the people that he would want to bring on. And when it was like that, it was always very cool because they would have these acts that were sort of strange together. Like I remember he had the footage of him and Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young was incredible.
Yep.
Like they came on and did Long Time Gone and with just Tom singing it. And it's this bluesy number anyways. And it's typically Stephen Stills singing it, who's got a great voice for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But he's just laying back on keys, and crazy David Crosby and Stills and Young are all up there on stage with him. And he just fucking obliterates it to a degree where like the guys are laughing. They're like, fuck.
Like, right.
And you know that Crosby smoked like a fucking metric ton of dope before credits roll.
He smoked a baseball bat.
And so he's like, the look on his face is like, he's just staring at him with these big, I love you eyes. People who didn't know, didn't understand that the people who did know were like, no, he's a motherfucker. You know, there's nothing funny about what Tom Jones is up to or what he can do. Like the power of his voice, like metal singers would have given their left nut to have the tenor and the power that that dude had. And Tom Jones is no little guy either. He's a big guy. It's fucking incredible. Like Thunderball is where it's at in that regard. Like, and he did that in one fucking take.
I didn't know that. Wow.
One.
That's incredible.
One. And he almost, of course, passed out after that last fucking note. You don't do it again.
Thunderball. Right.
Yeah. Listen to that fucking track again and think of it in those terms. Like, you just did
it live.
Pass.
When I saw him, he did it.
Yeah. Fuck. God damn it.
Oh, I forgot to tell you the best part of that story. I blew the fucking punchline. At the Celebrity Theater, legitimately, this is the real thing that turned me around of like, this is real drama. And it taught me a lot about having a dramatic setting before you come on stage and when you leave. They legitimately, as soon as the last note ended, blackout, all the lights come on perfectly. 2 seconds later, Tom Jones has left the building. An announcement like Elvis. Like, and it wasn't a funny joke. It was, they were really saying it.
Yeah.
Like, don't go crazy,
guys,
ladies.
Get out of here. Yeah.
He took Wendell, he took the Listerine, and he's gone. So don't.
The old Listerine that he used is here, which guessing some of you freaks would like.
But I couldn't believe they did it. I was like, wow. To us, that was a joke. Elvis had left the build. Like, that was a joke to us.
There's a version of In Excess doing It's Not Unusual as a sound check for a Vegas show on the Kick Tour. It was like on some weird... It was like a B-side of a B-side or some weird fucking thing that was like kind of half-ass recorded. Did you ever hear that, Damon?
No.
I didn't, no.
It's sound checking, so it's like, it's them live. And of course, Mike has that same kind of tenor when he wants to. And it was really fucking awesome. And, you know, Kirk is delivering the goods. I think Andrew and Kirk are doing all the stabs together. But I'd never heard him do it properly, which I thought was a miss. They should have done that. Maybe they just thought it was corny or too obvious or something. But I thought it would have been a hit for them.
I meant to listen to it, but and I wasn't aware of this because I looked through his catalog. Tom Jones did like a he called it Reload, and it was him doing a lot of covers. Right. And with, I think, Natalie Imbruglia, he does Never Tear Us Apart.
Oh, cool.
And I've never heard that. I got to listen to that now.
He's so great, dude. Like, I have, again, one of those unironic loves for him. Like, I've got every record. I park my car in the same garage as George White on almost everything, but I can't really get with the 1980s on for him. As far as my interest level, I'm very keen on everything else. But like, all of it is great and all of it is worthwhile and all of it is fucking Thomas Jones, dude. It's fucking great.
I really wanted to love, because it might be the greatest record title ever, The Lead and How to Swing It. And the cover of the record is him in like a mesh white tank top and like sky blue slacks. Like, because it's all like dance music and it's just not a good record, because I remember getting it. It's a terrible record. I was like totally disappointed. I'm like, this is terrible. And you're right, Aaron. He had a whole television series called This Is Tom Jones, which he won like a Golden Globe or something for.
It was awesome. Like back in the day, you'd have Glenn Campbell would do the same thing and like bring these motherfuckers on all the time.
In 1970. But see, that's like Damon saying, that's the stuff that made him seem like Mac Davis to me. Like all that stuff from my history, that all seemed corny and stupid to me. Like, I didn't think any of that was good. And that's what I came into 1985 with and why I picked him for my mixtape as a corny song.
Well, when you put them in the middle of the road between Tide commercials, it's hard not to think of them that way.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't, especially if you've not yet blossomed into a performer or keen to become one or even considering what it would take physically to do the thing that you're watching somebody do. And like, that's what's so fucked up. And like, all the obvious things are great about Frank Sinatra, but the way it would seem like he wasn't working too hard was the other thing, particularly when you would try to then cop it, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Is really impressive. Like the physicality of what it takes to do those things. Like Dionne Warwick in her prime, you know, Whitney, of course. And Michael in his prime, like all those people, you're like, holy Jesus, this is just jumping out of their skin. And Tom Jones, same way, same thing, you know? Where like, and it's really neat to see somebody who could be that. Well, you don't see that much anymore, where it's like they are an entertainer. They are not songwriters. They are not Bob Dylan.
They're interpreters. Yes, right.
You know, they're not creators, but they're entertaining people, which is like, to put that on a lower shelf is really a drag, you know? Because they're out there working it every night, man. Working musician like fucking Damon Pivotone. Out there working, working for a living. Like, you know.
Playing fast 16th notes?
Yeah, dude. It's fucking somebody else trying to fucking do that shit.
Yeah, what song is that you have to do that on, Damon, that you don't
Devo,
like?
Whip It.
Whip It, right, yeah. In fact, I just remembered, Aaron, that when I put the notice in my magazine in Fast Forward, I put consummate entertainer Tom Jones. I went to see him, and I wrote a little review and a little blurb about how great he was.
Good for you. I'm glad that you weren't shitty about it. Like, you could have been funny and been shitty about it, which would have been, you know, kind of lame and not worth
it. Nope, I'm telling you, like, you just put it really well. Like, he's an entertainer. You guys don't get it. Like, it's real. It's not, and I try to have a lot of what that is informed Guy Langostino, that it's real. It's not joke. It's not, you know.
Yeah. No, it's not kitsch from his frame of mind. He doesn't think it's funny. No. None of those people do. Paul Anka the same way. Like all those guys who are like, you know, sometimes they make it easy to make fun of them, but somehow it's easier to make fun of a Paul Anka because of what he's written and when you break those apart, rather than what it is. I think it would be fascinating to hear about his life in show business and being a fucking entertainer. But when you write some of those songs and with the content that he's done, it's, you know, he made the bed himself. Same with McCaniel.
Yeah.
He's also a great performer. I like Mac Davis in many ways. For the show, it's funnier to talk shit about him.
It's funny you say that because Mac wrote a song for Tom. It was called Watching Wendell Grow.
How about Watch Out, Wendell's Growing?
It was such a long song. The lyrics, you had to open the gatefold of the record and like, how many more flaps are on this thing?
Wendell. That is so good.
By the way, speaking of Wendell, I feel like missed opportunity for Tom, a merch opportunity. He could have patented a formula and called it Penisterine.
Listerine?
You know, we sell that in aisle fucking 69 over at Geraldo's Interaction.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Right.
Price to move.
You're just going down thinking like, hey, this Listerine, why is there a picture of Tom Jones on the side of this bottle?
You know how like in the Barbasol or whatever the fuck it is, that blue shit where they put the cones in?
Yeah, right, yeah.
We put all our cock rings.
Keep them clean.
I couldn't even get it out. They put all our cock rings in that.
You have to use tongs to get it out. Just
which one? No, not that one. The other one. The one under that one. The beige one.
The wooden one, the general. Get the general. They have names for them. Just wait.
No, not the tuxedo, the general. You heard me.
Get the general. I don't want the tuxedo.
You keep the little governor for yourself. I want.
Little governor doesn't fit me anymore. Okay. So that's my report. It's my book report on Tom Jones, and I love him. And I reminded myself I needed to go see him again, and I looked it up, and I shit you not, he is in Australia tonight performing.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Wow.
And he's doing a couple Bob Dylan songs and in the
late
show
70s?
This year. Yeah, he's 74. Yep. Yeah.
So it's like seeing Chuck Britt on stage right now.
Yes.
That would be him.
Yep. Yep.
Go get him, Dad. My dad can sing like Thomas. He's got pipes.
That'd be funny if Tom Jones came out and did, I had a four blanket night.
I'm going to do another songwriter you may not be familiar with down here. Woo! The Chuck Britt catalog, baby. He would be proud.
He would. For his birthday, we should, it's like a cameo.
Yeah, hey, Dad, listen, this is going to freak you out. You need to sit the fuck down.
It's cost me $600.
Okay? Yeah.
Here's Tom Jones doing
He's
do 20 seconds.
Of one of your
20
songs.
Seconds.
Oh, your my songs. God!
That's great.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad that you turned a corner on Thomas Jackson Jones.
Yeah.
Formerly loathed and now loves.
And that's now right. I have loved since 1987 and then really in 1991.
When
saw
you
him
loathed
live.
And loved like George has.
Yes. You know.
You know what life's about.
Wendell's about that way.
Yeah. Your Wendell credentials.
Yeah.
Redentials.
I've had my time. I've had my big fun whooping it up with, you know, one of my idols. So
I want to know something first, you guys, because we all woke up this morning, you know, since we're all talking, I'm assuming we all woke up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yes.
Did you realize that you were going to come to some sort of conclusion about one of our, you know, most beloved entertainers of all time?
I have my answer.
Well, George knew that it was going to be discussed. I didn't know. So I can definitively say I didn't know, and I didn't even know I had a question. That's how important this answer is.
Yeah. Do you now feel like you have an answer, though?
Yeah. No, I know I do. I absolutely do. I have enough answers for George.
Okay. There's like too many answers at this point.
That's right.
I'm going to take some back. All right.
I have my answer.
Thank you, Michael.
You know, Michael Caine did some Tomcatting around with Tom Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, those two together, that had
the Mike and Tom show. Get out there, dude.
Yeah, Michael's cock was Wendell's wingman.
where Tom Jones had the cock ring, and Michael Caine had black glasses made for his cock that he could wear, too.
Wow, it's so thick. You mean his cock? No, his lenses. All right, well, thank you, George, for that. And everybody go listen to Tom Jones. And throw your panties at the
and watch the specials, because there's so much on YouTube, like Aaron's saying. There's so many things of him.
You ladies, you're going to have to put your panties back on after chucking them at your iPhone, listening to the pod, our pod.
Yeah.
We're going to request that you put those back on and then listen to Tom Jones and throw them off again.
What's this about Wendell? Wait, what? Go back. The Listerine and what?
It's a two-time panty throw is what I'm saying.
I would just put on like four pairs and then you don't have to keep putting them back
Whip
on.
Whip them off.
Yeah.
Like a pitching machine.
I wonder if anyone's ever done that at a show. Like, you don't want to throw the one pair you have early, you know, so
you
think
get all jazzed.
Yeah.
I have on good authority that our female listeners throw their panties at their iPhones when they're listening to us. Look.
On good authority.
Yeah.
It happens at port authority, which is odd. You know, unseemly, frankly. We're at the Aubon Pond waiting on a bus. I need you to put your panties back on.
Aubon Pond.
All right, George. Well, you know.
Drag me down.
Listing Tom Jones' entire discography is not going to save you from the torture chamber, okay? Let's get down.
Yeah.
Down, down. Torture chamber.
Okay. I'm not gonna bullshit you, okay? I don't really give a good fuck what you know or don't know. But I'm gonna torture you anyway.
Suffering. Torture. Anger. Pain. Torture.
All right, here we are.
I know I thought of something too. Let this be a lesson to you. You can't avoid the torture chamber. If you bring up a topic as incendiary as Tom Jones's wiener and its name, and that still you still end up down here, well, I don't know what to do. That's it. I have nothing else.
Yeah, this is it.
You will not escape it. You will not escape it.
Yeah. You thought it was your ticket out.
You can't charm your way out of it.
You can't. You can't charm your way out of it. With cock talk, yeah. You can't.
With hot cock talk. No.
With cock, you can't do it.
With your Wendell chunk.
Yeah, exactly. So what's the government math on this?
We should check the government math because we need to determine who shall proceed next. Let's see. Last episode we did, we were torturing me and you guys did some Nickelback.
Nickelback was second.
Second. And then
Attila.
And Attila was first. First. And so since Aaron went second last time, I believe that means he goes first this time.
Makes sense.
That is right. All right. Well, here it comes, George.
Okay.
And look, thankfully for everyone, this is under 3 minutes. And remember that thing that you said that John Dunmore was going to slap somebody with his hirachi until they were both crying?
Yes.
That's what I feel like doing to this kid's mom. Sorry to say, no one should ever touch a woman. And I won't stand for it. But like just the idea of what she did, I want to hit the idea of what she did with a shoe. Let me say that. And
you want to be like that guy who threw the shoe at the George Bush,
George Bush
press conference?
Yeah, I want to throw a shoe at an idea. Yeah. And even though George Bush juked it, I would throw a follow-up sandal.
Yeah. I got a follow-up hirachi here. You have a question? No, have a follow-up shoe.
You got to, or have a second hirachi thrower, like on the knoll or something.
That was my left hand, too. I'm not left-handed. I missed him. I'm going to throw my right hand now.
Whack! Dan Quisenberry! Whack! Okay, Quisenberry. So, I don't even know what to really do first. Talk about multimedia. I'm going to send you guys a picture because you need to see this fuck. And then I'm also going to send George, I think, a video that I want you to not turn on the volume for because it'll fuck with things, just so you could see this fucking kid. This fucking kid.
Okay.
Fucking asshole. That's what he is. He holds the record for biggest asshole and youngest asshole, youngest kid to be on the charts.
I'm fascinated who this could be.
Yeah, okay. Start it, Damon, and I'll send the multimedia after that. Let's do it that way.
And I have the video, right?
I don't think so. No, I'm going to have to send it to both of you. I'm remembering that now.
Oh.
Just start it, Damon. Just start it.
Okay.
And then I'll send the picture and then I'll send the video.
All right.
It has to be from the 70s. Talk about corny 70s.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with this song because, as you know, or Aaron probably knows, maybe I've talked about it here before, but my older sisters were huge into this, this will probably give it away, this project, this musical project of a group of people. That's all I want to say to George. So this song was just one of the ones that always got played around my house.
Well, I've already seen the picture now, so I know who it is.
Oh, okay, got it.
This is... Little Jimmy Osmond, we're going to call him LJO, moving forward. This is LJO with Long-Haired Lover from Liverpool. This fucking asshole, dude.
I have a vivid memory talking about the 70s and Tom Jones' variety show. Of Jimmy Osmond coming on, Donnie and Marie.
Little Jimmy Osmond.
Little Jimmy. And he had something called a swing bike. Where like you could swing the seat, like you could steer with like your hips, I guess, and steer of it. And it enraged me of how stupid he looked on it. And I know they wanted me to want one. I didn't want one because he was on it.
Because he was on it with that stupid fucking bowl cut.
Yes,
like,
I had
dumb hair for a period of time too, but like with his fucking moist lips, looks like a fucking cheap candle. He's a fucking. Everything about this fucking punk. You just want to throttle him. God bless, but Jesus Christ.
We watched Donnie Marie every week, I guess, because at least they sang and had Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Why. I watched it every week.
There's nothing else on.
That was more compelling than the news, you know? This fucking cunt, dude. I haven't dropped a C in a minute. So, like, this fucking cunt, the fact that he kept Gene Genie off the top of the charts in the UK.
You're kidding me.
That's just part of my anger. That's part of my anger.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Top the charts for 5 weeks, George White, in the fucking UK. Good job, guys. Good job. Former world power, you fuckholes.
As annoying as that is, it's not surprising because we've established, the Brits, they do that wide swing from the most genius music ever made to the shittiest novelty songs, you know?
As you've illustrated, Damon, many times.
Yeah. And then look, you know, America, the world was in love with the Osmonds. It's not just your fault, but like it was massive over there, particularly in the UK. Again, it's fucking 5 weeks, top number one in 1972. And this was at Christmas time. There's not even a fucking Christmas song.
Yeah,
I didn't know he was, when I saw on the swing bike and whatever he came out guesting on the show, I guess, on Donnie Marie, he was maybe a teenager then by 77 or I don't
know. Yeah, he got older.
I didn't know he was little Jimmy Osmond. Was this like a little, like is he 6 years old here or something? Or how old is
he? Yeah, he's nine. 9 years and 8 months. He's the youngest person ever to reach number one on the UK singles chart, aged 9 years and 8 months.
That is strange, because this wasn't number one in America, was it?
No. It topped out at 38. We got our shit together. And that's 200 more than it's worth, you know? The guy who wrote it fucking put it out, and everybody gave him the fucking Spanish Archer and told him to kick rocks. Nobody wanted to hear about it. But Mrs. Osmond heard it and thought, this would be good for little Jimmy.
You mean so Mama that fucking Osmond? Bitch, whatever her name is?
Yeah, Mama, she of the Mormon uterus. Right. Champion of the world.
The baby factory.
And I mean, I'm a little raw about the Osmonds anyways, because Don was a fucking dickhole to Al Pipitone all those years ago. It's a story we've told on this show.
Oh, right.
So we've got a rich history of getting fucked over by the Osmonds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The David Bowie thing, fucking Al Pipitone thing. Now this.
And fuck Soldier of Love or whatever this comeback hit was in 1989 or whatever.
Yeah, fuck Donnie, dude. Yeah. Like, I think Marie's probably okay. But, like, all those guys with their fucking teeth. But this kid, let's listen to some more. Like, everything about a show kid that could be put into a show kid is this kid. He's like Engelbert from the Bad News Bears, but a show kid. It's what he looks like. It's what he seems like.
Can I interject? You sent over a picture of him that's aggravating, but the picture that's with the video I'm sending to you now,
yeah,
because it's a different picture. So here it comes, boys. And it's even more just sort of like punchable, even though he's six or something. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. The teeth, the hair, the round face, the whole thing. Yeah, you're right.
Collar's bigger than his head.
Like somebody told him, and it must have been Mama Osmond. Honey, you got to open your eyes wide. Open them wide. I'm gonna share the video so that you can see it in action whilst we listen, but then turn the volume down.
Oh, because he's trying to express the lyrics.
Yes. He's holding the microphone like a nut.
Bastard. God, he was born into this. He's the youngest, right? Is there a young guy? I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. Play it, Damon, and Georgie, play that, and just so you can see it along with it. It's like you'd never want to stop throwing Hirachi sandals at this dude's noggin.
Of course they have the Osmond Family Theater in Branson, Missouri.
Of course
it says on here.
Yeah.
So you want me to play the tune?
Yeah, play the song, and like we've done enough of it. Like, just imagine that every kid that you've ever hated, that's what this kid is.
Oh, and it's Christmas, I see. Yeah. Yes, okay.
Oh my God!
And it's
holy
the,
fuck!
It's the that Disneyland banjo, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm not super psyched about this kid, this fucking dope ass motherfucker, saying he's a long haired lover. What a fucking weird thing this is. So the lyrics are, I'll be your long-haired lover from Liverpool, and I'll do anything you say. I'll be your clown or your puppet or your April Fool if you be my sunshine daisy from L.A. And he does that horrible vocal twitch there, which you'll hear a bunch of. Now he's going to tell you about him. He'll be your leprechaun. He looks like one. And sit on an old toadstool. I'll serenade you till I'm old and gray. but I'll be your long-haired lover from Liverpool if you be my sunshine daisy from LA. And then he repeats the whole thing. So let's listen to it. And George, you have the video up with him bouncing around with his head?
Yes, okay. I'm looking at it right now.
Great.
Another thing that's wildly aggravating to me is the fact that, like, the novelty of a long-haired guy from Liverpool, which I'm assuming refers to the Beatles,
right,
was like 10 years gone at this point.
Yeah, well past.
Yeah, when I'm 64, right?
Do you happen to know, like, when the guy wrote the song?
It came out like 2 years before and did nothing. And then it was just sitting around until Miss Osmond found it, because she wasn't around. I mean, she was farming kids out, but they weren't performing in the early 60s. So back when you're right, like when one would go, oh my God, a long-haired kid from Liverpool, that was old by 65.
Yeah.
Because they were so huge that, like, that got fucked out as a thing to say, even, or look at their long hair. They were just the fucking Beatles.
Jimmy Osmond has the exact hair that the Beatles had when they were on, you know, Ed Sullivan.
I was going to say, and every kid had that hair by then, and long hair was actually long.
Looks like Ringo's hair on Rubber Soul.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it does. And long hair, by 72, I mean, people had really long, like, down to their middle of their back kind mm-hmm. of yeah. hair by that. That's what long hair was.
Because you can have long hair. Like, I had long hair. I was very feminine looking as a young boy. And I had very long, sort of prettyish hair. And, like, I got the, are you a girl? A lot. Like, I just was feminine looking. But, like, it didn't have a bob like this dude. This kid is, like, coming at you from, like, a Dorothy Hamill connection. Yeah. But looks like a waxy yeah. candle lit motherfucker.
Aaron is like the gender fluid Kurt Russell.
They, them, bro.
Are you a girl? I'm offended you even asked me that.
I can be.
What do you want me to be?
All right, come on with a stupid song. I'll be your leprechaun and sit upon an old toadstool. I'll serenade you till I'm old and gray. I'll be your long-haired lover from
Wow. Sound like a flute.
It's like what they would do to Michael Jackson, like when yeah. he was this little kid, making him sing those Christmas carols that the Jacksons performed, but Michael sang, are child abuse.
Yeah.
It's not cool. It's not fun for them to have done that to him. Like, right. seriously, it was fucked up.
There's no laws in place that don't allow people to sing in those keys anymore.
It's not cool, dude.
And also, I think I'll talk about product of the times. I mean, if you brought this up now, it's like, so he's someone's lover and he's 9?
Exactly.
That's your pitch. Yeah. Okay. Hold on. I'm going to call security. Hold on.
At least Scott Baio was probably pulling like 40-year-old trim when he was 13. Yeah. So because he had like this sort of masculine vibe, but this fucking twerp.
He's a kid. Yeah. He's obviously nearly a baby. Yeah. Right.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, if he wasn't in the Osmonds, he would just get his ass kicked every day at school.
Constantly.
Yeah. Well, this would be just some dumb song that you did at Christmas and, you know, everyone was embarrassed by. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got that fucking Disneyland banjo. It's really a lot like Winchester Cathedral, I guess, without the annoying
orchestrated or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's no wonder that the fucking Limeys would like it, you know.
Fucking Limeys.
My English brothers and sisters just made a mistake. You made a mistake. That's all.
One of thousands.
Yeah. So somewhere a young John Pickles was like, oh. I've seen a future, and it's little Jimmy
Osmond, isn't he?
I wish I was little Jimmy Osmond.
He's like a little man, isn't he, singing about being a lover?
He's just a little shaver. Wants to be a big bloke, don't he?
All right, come on, Jimmy.
I would like to hear Mariah Carey sing this song just to see if she can get up there. Really, I'm not kidding. Like, it's almost in that, what do you call it, flute? What do you call that range? She's called whistle singing?
Whistle.
Yeah, whistle singing. Yeah. Right. Dogs are running around with their paws over their ears. Like, have it stop.
We need Ray Charles. Blow the whistle, Q.
Ring the bell. Ring the bell. Q. Ring the bell.
I'll play that fucking thing. Get it over with.
All right.
You can really still hear him, huh?
Yeah, right. God, oh, it's the rest of the Osmonds? Or I'm not joking.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know.
I forgot that the brothers were in the band too, right? Like Tommy and I don't know their names.
Yeah, them and all their teeth, dude. I think that their teeth were like the roadies. Yeah.
Like they had a drummer and everything, and they had that band, right?
The whole, yeah, mm-hmm. all the brothers were the band.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right, yeah.
Oh my God. Shut up. It's not cute, dude. I try to put myself in like it would be like a version of it that I would maybe find is cute. Who was this meant for and why did it appeal to them? Like the secretary pool? Like what? Were they getting hot?
Kath?
Yeah.
Also, there's just no reason for this. First of all, 9-year-old lover, that's already weird. And second, it's during Christmas and it has nothing. I mean, the B-roll is of a sled in a sleigh ride. Mm-hmm. And he's in front of a Christmas tree and they zoom in on the ornaments and there's just nothing to do. Christmas isn't mentioned once in this. I mean, it just makes no sense.
They probably had to put it out sometime and they're like, oh, like put him in like an elf costume or something. Maybe we're like,
I guess, but what's the song got to do? I mean, even if
I don't know. Yeah. It just makes
sense. Nothing to do with Christmas at all. I mean,
change the lyrics to long bearded lover from the North Pole or something. Right.
Give a kid a beard.
Well, and also the B-roll's a sled. He doesn't. There's nothing in there about it being cold or it being Christmas or winter or anything. I mean,
No, he's just wearing a big fucking dopey striped shirt. Probably says Hawaii 72 on the back.
Tom Jones' version was Long Donged Lover from Wales.
I'd rather party with Tom's dick than party with this fucking kid.
Yeah, totally. They're the same size, probably. Your dick's as big as a 9-year-old? Yeah. Hey.
Yeah, with all those teeth, he's going to need like 7 bottles of Listerine.
Not that one. Not that cup of Listerine.
Not that one. Put that down. Jimmy, put that down.
That's mommy's.
Gross. All right, play the Come LOL. On. LJO.
Little Jimmy Osmond.
Little jack off.
You know, the engineer ball dismiss about it. What do you got going today? I don't know, fucking little jack off or some shit.
I don't know what it means. I don't know.
I'm so hungover. This is going to be.
Jackson?
I hope it's.
No.
I hope he's not annoying. I have no time for this with my hangover right now.
He sees a guy bring a banjo and he's like, ah, shit.
Oh, fuck. It's going to be a long day.
Hey, where do I set up?
I think this is against the union rules.
You set that banjo up in Studio J. This only goes up to Studio C. I know.
You mean out on Vine? Yep. Maybe.
All right. Forever can be the exception to the rule. Like the castrati that they used to cut their balls off have lower voices than this kid.
This is the kid when people who are like from an early age are like, I never want to have kids. I do not want to have them. This is what they're thinking of.
Yeah.
This is the image. They're like, you can't guarantee me that this won't come out of me. And so,
ergo,
as a result, I'm telling you to fuck off with that. Put 8 rubbers on, fuckhole. We're not doing it.
I disown my kid. Oh, why? Did he not the same religion? No. Was he gay? No, he was Jimmy Osmond singing Long Haired Lover from
It was LJO, dude. I'll say no more.
Oh. Okay. Well, can't argue with that.
I wonder if you put this on like a jukebox in a pub in Old Blighty, if people start singing along like this fucking like
love
a group.
It and they remember it. And,
yeah. They played it during like the war with the Falklands to get everybody pumped up or something.
It's just a fucking pub full of soccer hooligans.
Yeah,
and violent, most pale in the world. And someone puts this on, and they all just stop and just arms around each other's long haired lover firmly. Oh, long haired lover. All right.
It's LJO.
It's LJO.
Pickles, get in here.
Pickles, John. Pickles, come on.
All right, let's finish it.
I'll be your long-haired lover from Liverpool, and I'll do anything you ask. I'll be your clown or your puppet or your April Fool, cut my hair, even wear a
Jesus.
Weird. That's just so, it's just.
I'll wear a mask if you like, huh? You know what I mean?
He's a child. This is like a pedo dream. Like, oh, he'll do anything I want. He'll wear a mask. Totally. God. Oh my gosh.
Sounds like a real deal for me.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, fuck.
Here's another thing I just realized too. So what's the guy's name that wrote this?
I don't fucking know. I'm too wrapped up in LJO. I'll tell you in a second.
Yeah. Well, anyway, whoever he is, he does this and he releases it and he thinks it's going to be, because for him, it's like a legit song. He's maybe trying to do folk or whatever he's trying to do here. And it goes nowhere. And talk about winning the lotto. And his phone rings one day and his agent goes, hey, LJO is going to record this. He's like, what?
The Little River Band?
No. LJO. Jimmy Osmond. Who's Jimmy Osmond? He's the Osmond's brother. And he turns it, honey, we can buy a house in fucking Woodland Hills.
LJO. Christopher Kingsley. Christopher Kingsley.
Fucking 6 weeks, number one. We're going to make all kinds of money. And then that's what he... Did Christopher do anything after this or... Is this his one golden ticket?
Not really, but it was produced by Mike Curb, who owned Curb Records, which was part of, I guess, MGM, which was the Osmonds label.
Yeah.
And then Perry Botkin also produced all of that shit by the Poseidon Adventure gal.
Oh, Maureen.
Yeah. Oh. He was on the production team, not on the writers, but the production of that. And produced that record of hers where it was just like all the songs that were on that won Academy Awards. She did an album. So these guys loom large in our story.
Wow. Talk about like a weird thing. Curb Records is still in Burbank and next to my dry cleaner. And that building's been there my whole life. And it's still there. And it still says Curb outside.
Do they have something else going on? They just kept the signs and stuff?
I don't know.
Wow. They built the house that LJO built.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
The sign says Curb Records, home of LJO.
Are we almost done with this fucking thing?
Well, we're about a minute and a half into a 2 minute and 15 second song. I think the song just starts over, right?
Yeah, no, it's the same. It's the same. Fuck it.
Let's just go a little bit more.
Yeah, a little bit more. All right.
Oh, FYI, the comments are turned off on this video.
Oh, I bet they are. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine?
Yeah, you know why? By the fucking FBI, Child Investigation Division. That's
for real.
Turn that off. We really
shut it
down.
Did you say something about wearing a mask?
Exactly.
Fucking freaks.
You can find it in the dark web, I guarantee you.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I hate him, I hope LJO got out of there. Like, hopefully there was enough of the brothers and shit around that they kept him safe and all that. I mean, imagine all the creeps, dude. Fuck.
Oh yeah. How did he end up? Do you know where is LJO now?
He's still alive, and he made like the requisite 1980 record where it's like open for business, you know, like kind of a rocking thing. He's got a light leather jacket on.
Was he leaning on one elbow?
Yeah, yeah. I think he's like leaning on an Isuzu.
like Bayo's record. Yeah,
right. Everyone's always leaning. Yeah, everyone's taking a load off on every record.
Casual,
cover.
You know, already laid down. So you know, I'm already here. So join me.
Oh, you're here with the camera.
Yeah, right.
Can't slow down.
Yeah, can't slow down is the best. He's lying down. What do you mean can't slow down?
Yeah, apparently you can, Lionel. I have evidence that you can.
Are you sitting backwards on the Fonzie style in a chair on Can't Slow Down, right or not?
Yeah, he's taking a load off.
He's taking a load off.
He's trying to beat the heat.
He's trying to beat the heat, man.
He's wearing a yellow sweater. I'm going to wear a yellow sweater, if you don't mind. White slacks, right? Yeah. Yeah, of course. What the fuck? What am I, an asshole?
Whoa! Did I change keys or something? Jesus.
Damon, that was the noise you made when the Cherokee flipped over.
Jesus, the key of fucking Z. What is that? Jesus,
unbelievable. That whole bear is like a trope. It's a trope goof.
It's a Country Bear Jamboree thing, right?
Yeah.
Now.
It's kind of like an Al Jolson style of singing, exactly. Right?
Oh, I guess it is, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Please tell me there's video of him in blackface doing this.
LJO, come on.
How can we make this worse?
He said he'd wear a mask. I didn't know that he meant that. Like,
what
Jesus
if he wore
Christ.
A mask of Louis Armstrong? Well, you can do it on the variety show. People think it's funny. It'll play well in the South.
Kind of a dope fill.
Was that the Osman brother who plays drums?
Yeah, Norm Osman or whatever. Norm.
We got to rock your name up, Norman. All right, how about Norm? Done. Dunzo.
Normie Osman?
It's break for lunch. That's fucking fine.
Yeah, I think we
it's
got
it's fine
that
already.
One.
It's enough. It's enough.
I get it. I get it.
It's a torture chamber. We're not trying to kill a guy.
Yeah, right. We're just trying to extract information from him.
I know. Geez, we need him alive.
All right. Well, there you go with Lil Jimmy Osmond. I'm also disappointed that they didn't spell it Lil Jimmy Osmond.
Yes.
Another missed opportunity.
The British maybe wouldn't get that.
Yeah, that's true.
Is his name Lillian?
All right. So that was 1972. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, 72. Yeah. So I guess I'll fast forward you, George, by 3 years to 1975. Okay. Right. And it comes from a department. And it's weird that we sort of landed on a similar territory here. Mine comes from the you can't spell novelty without no department. Mine is also a novelty song. And almost to the point where, you know, you're like, all right, I thought we kind of agreed early on with the show that we're not doing sort of like outsider.
We said that.
Yeah.
We did say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because we get to sit here and play, you know, Dr. Demento songs all day. And that's not quite as fun. Right. But this song was a goddamn number four hit. And, you know, borrowing from the same entertainment industry strategy employed by Bobby Boris Pickett, superstar Terry Cashman, and Red Frobo Simpson.
All three of those people have been on this show.
Yeah.
It's a horror.
We have a fellow who kept going back to this well. So let's get this going here and I'll discuss it.
We're here on the beach where a giant shark has just eaten a girl swimmer. Well, Mr. Jaws, how was it? And what did she say when you grabbed her?
You see where this is going?
Oh, my God.
No. I kind of remember this, though.
Yep.
Yeah.
This is actually also a very short song. It's even shorter than Aaron's, believe it or not. And it's this, I say song in quotes. It's called Mr. Jaws from 1975. And it's a, quote, parody. Everyone calls it a parody. But I'm like, a parody of Jaws would be parodying the story of Jaws. This is just this guy, Dickie Goodman, who'd been making these sort of records since the 50s, and what they call break-in music, and the thing that's breaking in is these little song snippets, as he's like a reporter on the scene.
Kind of like Ray Stevens in the street.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's like him.
Yeah.
This is the second appearance by someone named Dickie on the show, and the third song in which Dickie was involved, including Dickie Bingo.
That's true.
Little Dickie, right?
Little Dickie, and then this Dick.
God, we got Little Jimmy Osmond and Dickie Goodman. Is that what we got here?
And Tom Jones Wendell.
And Tom Jones is Wendell. It's a peen show.
Wow.
All right, here we go. Stay tuned for hilarity.
Yeah.
You grabbed her.
Please, mister, please.
I know sharks are stupid, but what did you think when you took that first bite?
How sweet it is.
Mr. Jaws, before you...
God, fuck you.
Jesus Christ, this was like Drive Time. DJ would do
it
this
is.
Shit, too.
It's worse.
Yeah. Well, the thing that is confounding to me is that sometimes they don't even make sense. Like, the question he asks doesn't match with the song snippet.
Right, right.
I think one of them's coming up. Here we go.
What were the rules? I mean, we don't need to get in. We're not lawyers, but like, I mean, was it cool?
You had to pay everybody, right? Didn't you?
Well, I mean, the Beastie Boys didn't pay anybody for Paul's Boutique because it would have been prohibitive, right? So like things changed after that?
You are landing right in the sweet spot of the story, the information behind the song, because at first all the record companies, and this was like 17 different record companies, sued him and his label for using their songs until they realized, oh shit, the song that he's using a snippet of, those singles start selling again.
Sure.
Even if it was like a two-year-old song, they would have to rush out the single again if he used the song, and because people just want to hear the original. So they're like, they were mad at first, and then they said, oh, and then in fact, there's a quote, as an unidentified publishing representative told Time magazine, "It's the greatest sampler of all. If you're not on Saucer, you're nowhere." Now, Saucer was Flying Saucer, the first one he did in the 50s. It was sort of a parody of...
War of the Worlds?
War of the Worlds, thank you.
Yeah.
And so people were actually wanted to get on these records. At first they were pissed. They're like, he's using our songs. But then they realized, oh, this is great promotion for my record, you know?
Right.
Like I said, the first one was called The Flying Saucer. That was 1956. I'm not even going to go through them all. He released a lot of these fucking things. Like, every year he was doing a new one based on some news story or some entertainer or something. He did, like, in 66, he did Batman and His Grandmother. And it was another one of these.
On that sounds funny.
You got into porn?
Santa and the Satellite he put out in 1957 around Christmas time. It was the same guy as the news reporter asking stupid questions. And, you know, later, after the Jaws one, he did one called Kong, which is about King Kong, you know, that movie that came out in 77. And then 82, he was still doing them. We're in like 30 years into these at this point.
Yeah, 57. Yeah. Jesus.
And he did one called Hey E.T. I'm here with E.T., you know, and it was just like...
Dude, how drunk did he have to get it up to do one of these things again? Like, I mean, the money must have been great, I suppose, but like, you know, like artistically, I mean, you know, like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Dude, I love that that because of Jaws and E.T., he would tell his friends at cocktail parties, I've worked with Steven Spielberg twice.
Right.
Dick Goodman. I'm Dickie Goodman. And Steve and I, you know, work together at a couple of projects.
They're like, hey, Dickie, sounds great. And I go by Richard now.
God, what a fucking...
Here comes some more jokes for you. Actually, before I do that, you guys have heard these before, right?
Like this. I don't know. Yeah,
I kind of remember the beginning. I kind of remember this kind of record. I think I even remember this one.
Yeah.
Or at least hearing that beginning part. And right. I'm Mr. Jaws. And yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, here we go.
Before you swim out to sea, have you anything else to say?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Mr. Jaws, before you swim out to sea, do you have any comments or whatever he says? Why can't we be friends?
So what is that? The shark saying?
The shark saying that, yeah.
You hate me because I ate that little kid?
Yeah, sorry. What's the setup here? The setup is I'm trying to understand this joke.
He's at the beach.
Like Ray Stevens.
Yeah, he's on the scene at the beach and he's talking to Jaws. And then later he talks to the captain of the ship, Quint. Well,
the first thing that happens is they said, oh, a chick just got ate by a shark. That's the first stop of hilarity.
Right. Can we get a word from Jaws before he leaves? Right.
Where that movie famously opens up with that horrible fucking scene, like, yeah. Which sets the pace for the thrill ride of a lifetime. But like, it was really a horrible fucking thing to watch, you know, particularly at the time.
Yeah.
And so he starts his gag laden fucking chuckle train.
Generations of people, and mostly us, you still think of that when you go in the ocean right now today, and you will the rest of your life.
You can't not think about it at least once. Yeah, dude.
I was scared to get in a fucking pool for a while. Everybody was.
But then you were reminded you were the American rocker and you got
shit
together.
And then I didn't care. By then, yeah. But when I was like 9 or whatever, this, you know, you're like, he could get through the drain, you know.
You don't know.
Would chlorine kill him? I don't know.
That's the problem. We don't know.
Probably in about a second. Yeah, it would kill him.
Tom Jones was so scared of liquid that he didn't dip Wendell in Listerine for 6 months in 1975. All right.
There was a full-on panic about it.
A penic.
You know what's bad about this? There's so many things, but that it makes me mad is that it's not even a good setup.
Right.
Why would a shark play songs? It doesn't...
Well, that's them, it's
or
them answering.
Or want to retort to anything. Yeah, he's not going to retort.
Yeah, the lyrics are answering his question. Are you getting that part, George?
No. What?
When he asked Jaws, like, how did the swimmer taste? And then it's James Taylor going, how sweet it is, or, you know.
Yeah, when we hear a song, that's Jaws.
So Jaws has a record player in here, or like he's fast-forwarding a reel-to-reel tape. And okay.
He's a DJ.
It's a conversation that they're having, but he's using lyrics as the answers, okay?
Okay, yeah. Why is it a shark, though? Like, what?
Well, then he's going to talk to the sheriff and stuff, too, in the town.
Okay.
Here we go.
With me now is the local sheriff. Sheriff Brody, the shark will be back for lunch. What do you intend to do?
Make a little dance, make a little love,
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, is he going to screw the shark?
What do you intend to do about the shark? And he says, do a little dance, make a little love. I mean, I'm not asking for any sort of, you know, consistency or intelligence here, but you couldn't have found a different question. If you want to use that clip of Casey and Sunshine Man, come up with a better question.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like, why? What are you going to do about the shark? That doesn't answer the question that he's going to do a little dance, you know?
Is the follow-up, what are you going to do tonight? And then it's, I want to rock and roll. Is that the follow-up to this? I'm just writing some pitches right now for this song. It's so great.
Yeah, you're just blue-skying here, you know? It's not Dickie Goodman level yet, but we'll get there.
Everyone's safe in the pitch room, bro.
Hey, I want to pitch a sweet emotion punchline, okay? Listen. All right.
I want to pitch an LJO punchline. Can we turn LJO into chum?
The shark actually spits him out.
Oh, well, fuck. Don't give me that LJO.
This song is so stupid that Albert Brooks did a parody of Dickie Goodman, one of these styles of songs, that he co-wrote with Harry Shearer.
I have that record.
And it's not funny at all.
No.
And those are two very funny, like certifiably funny guys. And even they couldn't, you know, make this interesting or funny. So.
Jesus.
All right. Carry on with some more gags.
Just arriving is oceanographer Matt Hooper. Sir, if someone is attacked by a shark, what should they do? We are going aboard the fishing.
Did you get that, George?
Yep. Got it. Not even it's just one word.
Yeah.
Three words. Do the hustle.
All right.
What does that mean?
I mean, hustle. I mean, that one, I guess, get away from the shark. I mean, that one makes more sense than the do a little dance, make a little love.
But you don't leave the dance floor when you do the hustle. You don't slide off the floor.
All right.
The fishing boat of Captain Quint. Captain, will you be able to catch this giant shark?
I will.
Thank you, Captain. Captain.
Sometimes he'll do a little bit of like studio trickery, and like he just looped that Captain and Tennille song.
So incredible. These other guys have record players now? The shark had one, and now they have one? Is that what I'm supposed to... Is it the same record player, or is it a different one? Or
this entire cast was outfitted with portable record players attached to their
Close
belts.
And plays.
All right.
When you catch one of these sharks, what do you feel like?
Like a rhinestone cowboy.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
A cowboy doesn't... All right.
No, he's not even stretching.
Isn't there a fisherman joke there, maybe? Like, could we do... I'm trying to think of a fishing song or
son of a sailor.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks.
Yeah.
You know, I think Johnny Pickles did listen to this and was like, I can't fucking do any worse. I'm going to make a beautiful dollar in bullshit music.
All right.
We've just sighted the shark again. He's coming straight for us. Captain Quint is shouting something at him.
Get your baby one of these nights.
Hey, Jaws, the captain says he's going to catch you. What do you think of that?
Do you think that Don Henley thought that was awesome?
Well,
Mr. Chuckles.
Sold 30,000 records that week because of that one clip. So he probably thought, yeah, great, you know.
Glenn Frey talked him off the building.
Another Jaguar for me or whatever.
Right.
What do you think of that? Uh-oh, here he comes again. They've hit him. Mr. Jaws, why doesn't anything seem to hurt you?
Big boys don't cry.
Wait, go back. Oh, go. I'm just, so he said...
He shot the shark, Captain Quint.
No, before that. What's the thing before that? There's something happened before that.
Well, it was jive talking.
We're going to get you one of these nights. What do you think of that? What's your response that they're going to get you? It's jive.
Yeah.
Then they shot him with a gun.
Surprised he didn't have any emotion, I guess. Then it was...
No, he said, how come the bullets aren't hurting you?
Right. So Big Boys Don't Cry from 10cc.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't... See, I didn't... I was so blaring, I couldn't hear what that song was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not well produced either, by the way.
Yeah. No. It's not at all.
All right.
He's coming right onto the boat. Mr. Jaws, why are you grabbing my hand?
Wouldn't you give your hand to a friend?
No, wait, Mr. Jaws.
Okay, so now it's sort of, this song's almost over.
Oh, no.
You imagine being in traffic listening to this? Like, it's already maddening to be stopping and going, and then this fucking lunacy?
People in the 70s were probably cracking up, you know? And by the way, I also reiterate this. There weren't enough kids with money in the 70s to make this a hit. A lot of fucking idiot adults bought this.
Yeah, because we were kids, and I kind of know what this, but I didn't
buy
it.
This was at the office party. Mr. McCavendish fucking would throw it down, you know?
You know, I had, I bought C.W. McCall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a man's music right there. Shit.
Again, reminder that this song got to number 4 on the charts. Believe it or not.
Don't tell me this kept Gene Genie out of the fucking...
All right. So we got 20 seconds left. We got to kind of hear the outro here.
Mr. Jaws, that's not the way this record is supposed to end. Help! Help!
Good. He ate him.
Was he supposed to be drowning when he was going like a turkey?
Yeah, well, he pulled him into the briny deep.
Yeah.
And ate him.
Davy Jones' locker, here I come.
That's right. He's going to go down to see a Neil Diamond.
Jesus.
And Maureen McGovern.
So a couple of things that annoy me about this is one, and I feel like it's his family. His son seems to be really involved with his estate, Dickie Goodman's son.
Mm.
And he's called in various places the, quote, king of novelty, but it appears that only his family calls him that. I don't think it's an official, like, Casey Kasem called him that or anything. I feel like the family's just kind of keeping this alive, that he was the king of novelty. The other thing that they're claiming is that this invented sampling. This is the first version of, quote, sampling. And I'm like...
No, it's not.
No, it's not. It's not even...
It's a totally different thing.
Which is funny that Aaron brought up the Beastie Boys before, and they're sampling, because that's actual sampling. I was trying to come up with an analogy that would explain this, and what I came up with was, this is like a guy who accidentally ate string getting credit for inventing dental floss.
Whoa!
I mean, it could have, like, slid through your teeth as it went down accidentally, but...
I was just eating this box.
I invented dental floss. Remember I ate that string and then I shit it out? Yeah. Well, I invented dental floss. That doesn't
sound
anything
like... It got the corned beef out of my teeth. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's really stupid. It's not funny. And I thought... And of course you guys know where this is headed. I thought, well, I want to see if I can write one of these songs. Okay? And here's what I came up with.
I bet you could get drunk and not remember it and write a better song than this.
You tell me. You be the judge.
Okay.
We're here at Earloathing Studios, where the Gitmos are preparing to record their next episode. Gitmo Bros, would you mind if I asked you a few questions?
Up your nose!
Up your nose!
With a rubber hose!
With a rubber hose!
That wasn't very nice, and I feel you were kind of hurtful.
Feelings. Nothing more than feelings.
Damon! I understand you're disillusioned with religion. Did something happen at Bible camp?
Took the hand of a preacher man and we made love in the sun.
Oh my goodness! What were you thinking at the time?
Dear Mr. Jesus!
And where exactly did this happen?
Winchester Cathedral.
Did you tell anyone about the incident? George, I understand you once cried while staring at a toothbrush. What were you thinking at the time?
We may never love like this again.
Did your girlfriend tell you anything before she left?
That's when she said she was pretending.
Did you date anyone after your breakup? And were there any words of wisdom you lived by during this traumatic time?
As the saying goes, this too shall pass.
Aaron, I understand you were neglected as a child and your only toy was a rope. Did you do anything else to pass the time?
Talking baseball.
And did you go anywhere?
The playground in my mind.
What did your father say about it?
Papa just wants the best for you.
Why didn't you ask your mother for her help?
All she wants to do is dance.
Gitmo Bros, the podcast ratings just came out. How did your show do? And how do you explain your popularity with your listeners?
Things get a little easier once you understand.
Do you three have any final thoughts? Wait, I don't understand. Slow down. You're not making any sense. Okay, Gitmo Bros. Thank you for the interview. I'll just see myself out. Bye.
The end.
I was wrong. It is funny.
Oh, my face hurts so bad from laughing.
That was incredible.
God damn it. You were 50 levels above. Like, it's way too intellectual for you. Can't.
I wanted to see, like, how long it would take, because, you know, putting all the clips together and stuff was a bit of a pain in the ass. But actually, I pulled up the list of all of our songs we've ever done. And then it took me like 20 minutes to write that fucking thing. It's so dumb.
At least yours made too much sense. I mean, the one about all she wants to do is dance, maybe that one was...
Yeah, this other
that
fuckhead.
That one maybe was stupid enough.
They were paying him enough to think harder than he did. And no one's paying you to do a better job, by the way.
I knew that if they weren't funny, I would be a good parody of him. But if they were funny, then, you know, I couldn't lose, in other words, you know?
No, you couldn't. No. It's a good position to be in.
Oh, one thing I forgot to mention about that song. In 2018, his estate sold, I guess, the publishing for Dickie Goodman's stuff.
Who's using that for anything?
Where is this being played?
Who's placing this?
The publishing was already sold with the records that Sam Madigan.
If you had asked me, how much could they sell Dickie Goodman's publishing for? I would go, I have no fucking idea.
How much do they have to pay someone to take it off their
$15
hands?
$15 is my answer.
In loose change.
Believe it or not, the auction closed at $13,450 for the lifetime rights to the Dickie Goodman.
That's a funny title. Amount.
That's funnier than $15. $13,140.
And as part of this auction, I guess they have to disclose all this information about it. And so they said that the last 12 months' royalties was $1,741.
And that's back when people bought records.
This was sold in 2018, so a few years ago. So I'm not making fun of it. Because everyone's taking a shit in song royalties now, by the way.
Yeah.
I just would have no idea. It was just this very interesting document I found online of the auction information. So there you go.
I think that you don't want to strike when the iron is stone cold as far as the sale. The
family's waiting for him to come home. You know, hey, Dick Jr., what'd you get? How are we going to split it up? What do we all get? I got $13,140. Like $1 million?
Wow, $13 million? For that shit?
No.
A little south of there.
13.1. We got 13.1. What, really?
Each?
Wow.
So anyway, that's all I got for Dickie Goodman and you know, the Mr. Jaws, it's called. And then we've got LJO Little Jackoff with Long-Haired Lover from Liverpool, and George has to choose between these two Dr. Demento songs, basically.
I'll tell you something for real. You know, this is more something me, Aaron Britt, might say, but I am legitimately depressed by both of these songs. I really am, because these people were successful in show business for 30 years.
Yeah, one offends you as a songwriter and a lover of good writing, and the other one affects you as a comedian.
Yes, right. It's exactly correct. That's exactly correct. And I think I'm more affected as a comedian. I'm more offended by Damon's entry, but not by much. Because that whistle singing, the physical part of that is really, with headphones in, is really hard. But I'm more outraged as a comedian.
Right.
It's sorry, LJO, but it's Dickie Goodman.
All right. Well, I guess I'll take that one and dive into the briny deep with Jaws. Here we go.
The winner takes it all.
Good.
Bowl cut.
Swing, bite.
LJO.
Young lover. Shark bait.
You know, and really now I'm more depressed, and here's why. Because I had the balls to sit here and call myself a comedian. And then I'm offended by this when that guy was successful as a, quote, comedian for 30 years. And I have the balls to go, boo.
If that fuckhole can say that he was a comedian, then fucking you can. You were on an Emmy Award-winning writing staff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But
so
just...
fuck that, dude. You're way more valid than him.
Well, George, I think it's time for you to make us feel a little bit better.
Yes.
Yeah, it's up to you.
Yes, I think I can.
But the person who's going to allow you to do that is our pal, Majel.
Yes.
And she's going to... you know, entertain us right now with her thoughts on the sorbet.
The robot seductress!
Sorbet.
A clean break from crap.
She is so right.
I love that one.
Clean break from crap. Just cut it right off. Let's just clean break this.
Yeah. So, George, now I have some other tasks. Is that true?
Just one other one. So I'll start off by saying that this is one of my favorite hip-hop songs from the early 90s, which I'd forgotten about, which I love. And your conversation about sampling leads us right into this. So I'd like you to play the sorbet clip first, and then I will explain where this sample comes from. I did not know this, and this was part of it was fascinating me. So just play the sorbet clip first.
Yeah, this is really cool. I know the story, and I know the both songs. So
okay.
Yep. Yeah, very interesting. Here we go.
Yep.
Now, this is the original that was sampled for the hip-hop song later. That's
correct.
What's going
on. Correct.
Okay, here we go.
Zilch, Mr. Davalina, Mr. Bob Davalina, Mr. Davalina, Mr. Bob Davalina.
Zilch, China Clipper calling Alameda. China Clipper calling Alameda.
Zilch.
China Clipper calling Alameda.
Never mind the furthermore.
You can stop now.
Never mind the furthermore. The police.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, George.
So what that is it in 1967 when the Monkees finally won their battle with Don Kirshner to make the record they wanted to make? They made a weird. That's just a spoken word thing, if you will, of the four of them saying something that just random. It's just stuff that occurred to them in their head. And the story from Peter Tork is that he was walking in a mall. Make sure it's Peter Tork. Hold on. Which monkey did this?
It's crucial information.
It's crucial information for which monkey did this. So yeah, the song's called Zilch, and that's all it is. It's just them saying, each one of them saying a line. And sorry, it was Nesmith that was walking through a mall in San Antonio with his wife. And over the loudspeaker of the mall came, come to the office. Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina, please come to the office. Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina.
Right.
Like these to announce things. And it just occurred to him that was a rhythmic phrase.
Yeah, it's funny if your name is Bob to have Dob
in
your last name.
Mr. Bob Dabalina. And so he said it just that way, just like that, Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina. And that it was 1967, the record was called Headquarters. That was some weird experiment they did just on the record, and the other guys start saying other things, but it was inspired by him saying something random, which he heard, you know, whatever, 6 months before, Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina, and the rhythm of that. And now we go to Del the Funky Homo Sabian from 1991 and his record, his hit single, Mr. Dabalina. And Del just made up a story of, and this is what I like about the Mr. McCavendish of it all, is he just thought that sounded like an asshole's name. Like, this song he made up is just about a guy who rips everybody off and is an asshole.
Yeah.
And the chorus is that sample exactly from this record. And I love the creativity that of all the samples that Del the Funky Homo Sapien has, he has that. That's one of his samples. He thought that was interesting and like, well, I'm going to save this. And he put it in it and made a song out of it. And that's what sampling is.
And that's what creativity
exactly.
is called.
Yes, right. And also it was sort of, what I love about this song is that, and I don't want to be an old guy that doesn't like new music and whatever, but this was back when hip hop was creative, you know, like.
And also lighthearted.
Yeah, exactly, and fun. I reminded myself that I liked songs that were kind of fun. Like, I loved the Big Nose Guy. Stop What You're Doing About...
Digital Underground.
Yeah, Digital Underground. I loved that. And I liked rap that was funny and happy and whatever before all the gangster things came a few years later. Which, yeah. I mean, kind of, there was, I thought about this, there was something even a little bit, you know, sounds weird to say now maybe, something a little bit funny about NWA and the extremeness of what they did. And
right. I mean, they were trying to be funny and menacing and everything. They were trying to be entertainers.
Right.
You know?
And I thought, well, yeah, that's when even that was kind of funny. But anyway, so please play. And by the way, Dell is from Oakland and he is, I believe, Ice Cube's cousin. And Ice Cube produced this record, which I didn't know.
Cool.
So pretty interesting stuff. Let's hear Mr. Dabalina.
Neat.
Neat. That's neat. Neat information, George.
Here we go.
Oh, I know I'm drunk now. Ladies and gentlemen, I forgot my favorite man sitting over there. His name is
Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina. 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 Mr.
Dabalina. And the video is so great too, with all the yuppies in their business suits and
yeah, all same like same guys, like all dicks running around.
Everywhere. Yeah, yeah. What year was this again, George?
91.
91. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina, won't you quit? You really make me sick with your fraudulent behavior. You're gonna make me flip and then an army couldn't save you. Why don't you behave, you little rugrat? Take a little tip from the tabloid, because I know I'm not paranoid. When I say I saw you trying to mock me, now you and your crew are on a mission trying to hold.
Yeah, it's a great groove. It's like, who was it? Funky Cold Medina guy.
Tone Loc. Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of fun, you know, he's telling a story. He's not just bragging about, you know, his bitches and stuff.
His shoes and his money and his
that totally makes us sound A, old and B, white. But really, it's like, if more hip hop was like this, I'd probably be a bigger hip hop fan. You know,
those are rap names, is A, old and B, white.
Instead of B, real, right? B, white. Get it?
I sampled a Jimmy Osmond song for my...
Exactly. Forget about like what this uses. Forget about George Clinton. Forget about James Brown.
Yeah.
There's LWG, little white guy, be white, and A old in the house.
All right.
In your fraudulent foes, you used to front big time, now I suppose that everything's cool since the style of apparel you adopted you used to make fun of, but now you want to rock it, so you gotta kick it with the homies, but DEL is already hip to your cronies.
I wonder if they got like Flea in to do this one too. It sounds like a good bass line.
It doesn't say Flea on
things
here.
Were hyped up a lot more too, tempo wise. Things are much, much slower now.
Yeah.
Like they're like all the girl ones were this way too. Like Salt and Pepper was all around this BPM with that same type of loops. Naughty by Nature later on, Digital Underground, Tribe Called Quest was like this.
Even En Vogue used that sample.
Yeah.
Same kind of guitar. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Technically, it's not even a sample. It's like they use that line, but that's a different guy saying that. That's not Mike Nesmith saying it. That's a different guy saying Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina, right?
Yeah, I think that they're just having funny with they're having an interpolation of the clip. Because it doesn't sound like they're just slowing it down.
I mean, I don't know. It says they use the sample. It says they may have pitched it.
Okay.
Yeah, they use the sample. It says right. It says that's what they did. Yeah. Okay. Like he liked the sound. He liked the rhythmic part of it.
Right.
Like he said at the very beginning. I don't know if he knew that. I don't know if you could know that in 1991. Like the rhythmic part of it. That's what he liked about it, why he sampled it. It's a rhythmic.
It's not necessary to take the actual piece of property though. You could just say that phrase and enjoy it.
Right.
And
yeah.
Re-record the phrase.
Right, I don't know. It says it's vocal sample from the Monkey song Zilch.
Maybe he took it from the Munchies.
The Munchies. He took it from he had the Munchies. But it says, I thought it's, and in the video, it, you know, they're Dell's doing it, but it's the video, so it looks like, you know, of course he wants to sing the hook.
Yeah.
But it does sound pitched somehow. You're right.
Here we go.
Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina.
What are those girls saying?
By the way, I love it. I thought they were saying, boy, how stupid, Mr. Bob Dabalina. Yeah. They're saying, glory hall stupid, Mr. Bob Dabalina.
Glory hall stupid?
Glory hall, like he belongs in the hall of the glory hall, like the football hall of fame, like the glory hall stupid. That's how stupid he is.
That's great. Video's so good.
It is.
I hate to keep talking about it, but it's like the girls are cute and the band's cool, and then the nerdy corporate white guys all looking at the clock and everything. It's really fun. I recommend people watch this video because not only is the song great, but the video is super compelling to watch.
And the drunk guy in the beginning, like, this is for like my man over there, Mr. Bob Dabalina.
All right.
You could manipulate, you thought you could fool me. Ooh, Mr. Dabalina. Teach wizard put me on a stuffer, then he schooled me. Prince could be fraudulent, just to wait and see. First he was my money grip, then he stole.
Catch me up on the lyrics, you don't have to read them to me, but what's the story here again? Just an annoying guy?
Yeah, it's just an annoying guy. It's just a guy that's a snake and an asshole. He's fraud. Basically, he's fraudulent. That's what he's trying to get across here.
Oh, I wonder if he's sort of supposed to represent like a record industry guy or something.
Del said he just thought, from the name, he just doesn't represent anything. He just, like I said, Mr. McCavendish, it just sounded like someone who was a jackass.
Yeah.
So he made up this story that, you know, like some of the stuff, Mr. Dabalina is a serpent, don't you agree? The two-time resembles Aunt Jemima with jeans and a dirty white hoodie. Like, it's all just guys. It's not necessarily even, some of it's like kind of corporate guys. And there's some about that, but there's also other ones like guys that are dicks, you know.
Yeah.
The Bob Dabalinas of the world.
A 1991 knob job.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Honey grip, then he stole my honey dip. Mr. Dabalina is a serpent. Don't you agree? The little two-timer resembles Aunt Jemima with jeans and a dirty white hoodie. Seems like he wouldn't be a snake, or would he? Disguises come in all sizes and shapes. Notice the facade of the snakes. They all catch the bait.
Did Del the funky Homo sapien do anything else besides this song?
No, and that's the thing is he didn't like how any of this came out. Also, you really can hear a lot of NWA in here. I mean, there's a lot to me. Yeah. It sounds a lot, at least the backing tracks do. And yeah, he didn't like this, and so he had a falling out with Ice Cube, and then didn't make a record for a while, and he came back, and he did some other stuff, but nothing like this.
Are you saying that like he didn't like the production of it?
Yeah, he didn't like the way this sounded.
Huh.
Yeah.
I think it sounds great.
And by the way, I love the not because it's my name, but I love the title of this album is I Wish My Brother George Was Here. I always thought that was a great title.
Could he be referencing Liberace?
He
Liberace
is. He
famously is. Would talk about his brother George all the time, right?
Yep, that's what it said. He's referencing that. And then something about Looney Tunes, something where someone had a line, they said, I wish my brother George was here. And I forget who that was.
Right.
But he was doing both. Yeah.
All right, Del.
Catch the vapes, even though last year there was GQ. Took a lot of time before the DEL could see through the mask. All I had to do was ask the Emperor and Kwame. And my man responded, they were bomb, eh? Fraudulent flow with the strength of Hercules. The way you almost did must really hurt your knees. You need to take heed.
Ooh, he just said a bad word.
The way you're on my dick must really hurt your knees. And he rhymed that with Hercules. And that's just genius.
Yeah.
Hercules and on your knees. I love it.
For sure.
Quit being such a groupie. Ever since I did a little show in Guadalupe, I never saw a groupie like you. But what is funny is you wanted to be down with my crew. But DEL is not down with any clowns of justice. So I would suggest that you try to impress Uncle Fester, Dabalina. Because you don't impress me, Dabalina. The style of dress is not the key, Dabalina. It's on the mind and the heart. So you should start by remembering you gotta pay.
Now that the story is fairly well known about some man at a mall who was paged named Bob Dabalina.
Dabalina, yeah, right.
Someone had to have found him or known who he was, or like his kids or something, right?
Yeah, I couldn't find anything about that at all. I was just like, because I didn't know that, and I thought, oh my God, I love this song. I think I should do it maybe. And then I wondered, well, where did this come from? And then a lot of people on the internet said, oh, I need to come write up an article. Where did Mr. Bob Dabalina come from? And I came upon the San Antonio thing. I love, was it a mall in San Antonio? Yeah. That's exactly where Bob Dabalina would live.
That's where Aaron's always flying in and out of in his gags.
And the one I remember is Rex Dexter, which is almost the same song. It's almost the same rhythmic thing. Yeah. Of that when I worked at Nordstrom's, you know, like a seasonal help and all that on commission and everything, the guy, and only if you worked at Nordstrom's did you know this, and I don't think it was even the in-house detective's real name, but when they paged Rex Dexter, that meant we need help over here. Someone's ripping something off. And it was the same thing. Rex Dexter, please come to Ties. Rex Dexter, please come to Ties. Like, it was the same kind of Rex Dexter. I love that they came, because you remember when they used to do that, when they used to announce thing over loudspeaker, say somebody had a call or, you know, something like that. They would page people at a pool or the airport, pick up a white courtesy phone,
right. Which
no one does that anymore. There's no need to.
Yeah.
And maybe they paged Prince at Carlos and Charlie's. I don't know.
When you page Bob Dabalina in a public place on an intercom, it's code for the toilet is clogged again.
Yeah, maybe it might be.
More like Clogalina, am I right?
Hey, come on.
Oh, thank you.
Professional broadcasting. All right.
When you gotta pay a fee, Dabalina.
Yeah, I just need to know, like, if the Dabalina family know that
exactly.
Dad has Bob a song. Dabalina. Like, there's a chorus. You have girls singing about Bob Dabalina.
Imagine if they just found out now-ish. Like, wait, when did it come? 91? What the fuck?
Hey, they're talking about Dad, says Roy Dabalina. I don't
know. I say Grandpa now. When it originally happened, it's forever ago. It's three generations of ignorant fucks.
Of unaware Dabalinas.
Dabalina means the head in the sand in gay Paris.
I should have done that. I'll do it right now. Like I'll just say how, because all that's going to come up is the song. But I'm like, you're looking, you're like, oh my God, there's 45 Bob Dabalinas on Facebook.
Like, yeah, I'm friends with two of them.
I go by Robert now.
But that's the only thing it's famous for is this song. I know.
Yeah. Dabalina sounds Italian, does it not?
It does, yeah.
So maybe it's Roberto.
Roberto Dabalina.
He was second generation. His parents.
My guess, too, is that that wasn't the person's name at all. The guy was the operator who was saying it at the mall was Ellis Islanding it, a misunderstood translation of somebody's name.
Yeah, right.
He's Anglophiling it.
He was trying to say Delabate.
Mama monkey.
Gary Delavicio.
All right. Now, this is good use of saxophone here.
Yes, this is good use of saxophone, just on the outro, yes.
Yeah, it's pleasing to my ear. It's not like that, you know, Kenny G level.
Yes.
Yes.
It makes me happy. I'm happy. Yeah, this is great. Actually, it
makes me want to party.
Exactly. If that song doesn't make you, that rhythm doesn't make you want to shake your ass, like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's no hope for you.
I was raging balls deep anytime that song was on in 91, so
yeah, right.
I didn't want to do that again.
Do you remember that song, Aaron?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of funny. I was going to do something else, and I thought about it, and I forget why I thought about it. But I thought of Mr. McCavendish, and I thought, well, someone somewhere sample in 40 years from now that we'll have a Mr. McCavendish song from us.
Well, Damon just showed that he's got mad skills as a sampling producer.
Exactly, as someone who uses, quote, samples.
Yeah. That's right. Well, I mean, he didn't like working with Cube. Now he's going to work with Damon Pipitone.
That's right.
Of course, the rates have gone up.
Yeah. I'll charge you what I charged myself, which was losing money.
your soul is being chipped away. Oh, my God. That's a price.
Well, good show, fellas. That was fun. Yeah, fun.
Great sorbet. I love that song. Always have.
Yeah.
And if my friend Ray Smith is listening, he's the one who turned me onto that song back in the day, back when it came out in 91 or whatever. And we used to die watching that video where the nerdy corporate guys are all like, they're all standing at the urinal and then they all look at this clock at the same time.
Right. It's almost like Devo, right?
Yeah. 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 It's just a funny video. And so I have great memories of Ray and I watching that and laughing our asses off.
Yeah.
So there you go, boys. What an episode! I would say 73 is one of the best.
Yeah. Pretty. That was pretty fucking good. Even though I was tortured, those two songs were awful. They were really fucking awful.
Our work is done here.
And message received, by the way, George. You love LJO. I get you.
Yeah,
I
love LJO.
And message received.
I love that kind of humor too. I love novelty humor. I love it.
All right. Well, there you go. Episode 73. We are going to wrap it up here and we're going to say goodbye until next episode, which government maths dictates it to be episode 74. Mm-hmm. And that's when we will see you and we're going to say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Ear and Loathing.
Tennis elbow.
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not going to lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind you playing it, but lower it.
Tune in next time for more Ear and Loathing. End transmission. Goodbye.